Hello, it is Tuesday, July 14th. Okay. Big show. A lot of conversation, a lot of topics, a lot of this, a lot of that. You know, all that stuff. We can't thank you enough for choosing to listen to this show. I know there's a lot of other stuff that you can listen to. Okay, there's a lot of options out there. The fact that you let us penetrate your ears every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, we are eternally grateful for. If you like this show, go ahead and tell a friend. You know, little guerrilla warfare out there, ground and pound offense to spread the love, spread the show. And if you didn't like the show after you listened to it today, just go ahead and act like it never fucking happened. Okay, tight, let's get to it. Big news coming out of the NFL world this morning. And this goes back long time. I would assume before 2013, but in 2013, Dan Snyder wrote a strongly written statement that said, I will never, ever change the name of the Redskins. I will never, ever do it, basically. So just move on. Then a couple years ago, 2018, I believe, it became another talking point again. And Dan Snyder doubled down and said, I will never, ever, ever change the name. And here we are, July 13th, 2020, and a statement from Dan Snyder's squad this morning via a press release says that they are officially retiring the Washington Redskins name and logo from the NFL. Now, in a press release that had Redskins on it eight times, I believe, they announced that the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name, the review has begun in earnest. Has begun in earnest?
Oh, yeah. That's a guy.
What does that mean? I don't think that is a guy. Ernest. Ernest goes, does Christmas or something.
Ernest changes the football team name.
Is that clue, the new name?
That review has begun in earnest. As a part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors first. By the way, look who's listed first here. We want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins' name and logo upon completion of this review. Dan Snyder and Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud, traditional, rich franchise and inspire our sponsors. Look who's first again. Sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years. Okay, so they've officially said we're getting out of here. Now, a lot of people say this was strictly because FedEx pulled out of official titleship or title sponsor of their stadium. Nike started getting rid of merch and everything like that. And I think that's a very fair assumption. We started doing the math, I guess, in 1990-something, 97, late 90s, the Washington football team, formerly known as the Redskins, and FedEx got into a stadium sponsorship deal for 27 years or something for $200 some million, okay? That averages like $7 million a year. It's actually not that big of a hit to the pocketbook to Dan Snyder, especially at this point, if he was to make another move. But whenever you title in that Pepsi said they won't do business and Nike won't do business with them, that is when Dan Snyder had to look at people who are in business with him and rely on him. And then he said, okay, we got to do it. We thought this was never going to happen. A lot of people, I think Redskins fans thought this was never going to happen. Snyder will never give. But now there's an opportunity for the first time in a long time for a brand new franchise name in the NFL. What's that mean? That means new merch. That means new everything. New. They have to have a new chant, new saying, new logos, new traditions, new everything. And I would assume that there are some Redskins fans of the past that are not pumped up about this. But 5 to 10 years from now, will anybody ever think this was a bad decision? No, that is no way. But what are they going to fall on? I guess there's quite a trademark war happening behind closed doors right now. Last night, somebody tweeted from, I think, Sports Business Journal or something like that. They said that this morning they're going to be announcing the new name. And I was pumped up. I'm like, hey, we never get anything announced by the time our show's on, right? Everything's normally like noon. Like we'll have this to talk about. Turns out they are just announcing that they are going to be announcing a new name. It's an announce for an announce, which I respect and appreciate. But the reason why is because they can't announce the name because they have to lock down all the trademarks, all the potential trademarks, all everything you could potentially need for merch, slogans, slogans, sayings. You saw Tampa Bay get trademarked as soon as Tom was thinking about something. That's what they have to do. And I guess there's a guy named something McCauley who owns all these trademarks because he's been looking forward to this day when Dan Snyder finally has to move it. And I would assume Dan and this guy are currently going at it for potential trademarks. There's a lot of names being thrown out there. DCFC, the Washington Red Wolves, the Red Tails, the DC Generals. How about the Washington Sentinels? Hello, Shane Falco. Yeah. There's a lot of names out there. Whatever they fall on, some people are going to love, some people are going to hate. I just hope it has a cool song and dance that we can sing along with if they ever actually finally win this whole thing.
The tough thing, I think, for the team is they've been so bad for so long. Now that there's a team change, the name is changing. It's going to give a lot of people in Washington and their fan base an excuse to be like, maybe I just go root for another team and I don't even worry about this.
Could give some people some outs. Could give some people some outs. Like those diehards. You know, you think about the season ticket holders that have been there for a long haul. Their entire houses potentially, their game rooms are potentially all maroon and or burgundy and whatever it is. You get it. Their entire thing, all the state, they have all every jersey. What are they going to do? What are your loyal? See, like the backbone of your business is season ticket holders whenever you're a football team. Now, granted, TV rights, obviously great. But if you want to talk about just your business alone, the season ticket holders are normally the people buying a lot of your merch. They're the people spending the insane amount of money for the tickets each year. There's going to be a lot of people that aren't going to be happy with this. But like I said earlier, 5 to 10 years from now, you look back and be like, oh, probably a good move. Yeah, definitely a good move.
How many guys do you think are on this like committee to do this? Or is it just Dan Snyder who's picking this?
I like to think of Rivera and Snyder just staring each other down a long, long table. Red Wolves. Write it down. And then somebody goes and writes it. Like, that is a – when you're talking about naming your business, okay, naming whatever, that is a very, very high-stress thing to do. I mean, it is – we've just – there's been numerous times here where we've had to name things and you just give up basically because it is impossible to think of what's the perfect name for this. What summarizes everything we want to represent? What is everything that this is and everything like that? And then you think of a name and then you got one person that's like, but what if, and you're like, well, you're right. We got to write that down. And then it's like somebody else. So it's not an easy process to do that. And I thought the biggest hurdle would be that I think July 10th is when this conversation started. And July 28th is when they're supposed to check into training camp. So that's roughly 18 days that you have to make an entire business move. I thought there was no way they were going to be able to do that. But it turns out they say by the end of this week, the new name should be announced. But right now you're seeing, I guess you're not seeing it. You're actually not seeing it, which is kind of the point I'm making. The things you can't see are lawyers right now going back and forth for trademarks and stuff like that. And it's probably very expensive. I would assume there are some big checks that are getting writ because there's people that get on the internet and they just buy up real estate. It's like GoDaddy.com basically set up like a potential gold rush for people. People just started buying up website names and buying up property on the internet. And then when businesses would come, you're like, oh yeah, no, sure. Just sell the real estate to them. It was just like, that's a business that people have. They have that with trademarks as well. It's just something that happens where people get into that business because they feel like they can foreshadow or think somebody would need this at some point. I mean, I know of like three different humans that do that and did that and got broken off and will still get broken off because they still own real estate as businesses continue to come here. And I would assume that Daniel Snyder is learning quickly about that business. Like, oh, this son of a bitch. Just give us, how much does he want? Well, he bought it for how much? $150. He wants how much for it? That's good business, baby. Hey, Dan, that's good business, baby.
That's business, baby.
That's business, baby. You got to do what you got to do.
I don't know what the actual number is in terms of like what teams get for merchandise and stuff like that, but do you think teams will be more reliant on that income this year with no fans in the stands, like selling jerseys and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think jersey sales, t-shirt sales, towel sales, flag sales, all that stuff is going to be a rather big push. I assume you're going to see a lot of sales going on. I assume there's going to be a lot of internet, you know, like internet company work that they got going on.
Buy one, half off.
Buy one, get one. Yeah. WWE has one of those like every single week. It's a, I would assume that that becomes a much bigger focus because they know that the ticketing department's got nothing to do for at least a couple weeks. Or, I don't know, PSG, I guess they had an exhibition over there in France. They had 5,000 people in their stadium. Originally holds 25,000, so 20% capacity. Is that going to be the new benchmark? Is France in a much different place in America, I would assume, but that's at least like kind of happening. The AFL had fans up there, so maybe there'll be a slow roll back in there, but I think the NFL has to at least think that the first couple weeks are going to be rough. Joining us now is a man who's a former bantamweight champion in WAC and UFC. Ladies and gentlemen, the handsome, the savage, Dominic, the Dominator Crew! Yes! What up? What's going on, man?
Hey, you guys are awesome. What a cool, like, what a cool way to introduce me. Thanks, man.
Hey, a round of applause. We always like to make somebody feel real comfortable so they can give us the good stuff, you know, whenever we start chatting a little bit.
Man, I could see that.
Hey, well, we hope you're healthy. We hope you're safe. Let's talk about the, you know, fight stoppages, because this past weekend, it was a major talking point in your division when Jan was playing bongos on top of Aldo's head. Now, let's take a trip back in time a little bit when you were fighting Cejudo for said bantamweight championship, and it was a stoppage of the fight. Cejudo wins. You said you did not agree with the stoppage. Cejudo leaves, vacated title. Now Jan and Aldo are fighting for it. Jan ultimately wins, but everybody's up in arms about the fight should have been stopped before it was, and then your fight with Cejudo, you said no, it shouldn't have been stopped. What is the ruling there? If you're a ref, what should they be looking for? What is it? Because as a, I don't want to say a basic ass eye in this world, I have a pretty basic ass eye in the mixed martial art, I understand they're fighting, but what is the ruling there when it comes to the ref, and what would make it a little bit easier for these guys to make the right decisions?
I like your question about that, because there is actually a real way you can know when a fighter's in danger in there, and that's by having your head be a bongo yourself. That's the only way. The only way to know when to stop a fight is that you've been in there and had your head smashed in the corner of a fence and you can't move. And, you know, when you see certain guys, like let's say I'm fighting Aldo, let's say Jan is fighting Aldo, right? Jan's just doing his job and he knows, all right, it's my job to pour it on because I can see he's quitting, right? Why can the fighter see that he's quitting but the ref can't? That's what I want to know. The ref's right there. You can't tell this guy's quitting, and then you can't tell that I'm not quitting while I'm standing up. Like, you can't see the difference. Now, The next missing thing that we've got to add into this, they're human. There's human error here, right? We're all human. Now, let's not forget the amount of adrenaline that goes into these fights. I mean, when I saw my ref before I walked out to my fight, and he went to give me the rules, because before you fight, they sit you down, they talk to you about the rules. All right, if their hands on the floor and you knee them here, this is illegal. Don't have your hands out like this. Keep your hands closed. Strikes have to be six to 12 strikes are illegal. They take you through the whole spiel. And my referee, I'll never forget, this was the only time I ever felt it. He was so nervous, he couldn't even look me in the eyes. I mean, I'll never forget that I'm getting ready to walk out to this fight. It's one of the biggest fights in the history of the sport. Nobody else is watching any other sport anywhere. This guy looked like it was his first time ever doing a co-main event in his life. Like, he was shaking. He couldn't make eye contact. I had to ask him to say the rules to me because I couldn't understand him, because he was so, like, he was mumbling so bad. And I just remember thinking in that moment, like, man, this guy, I've worked 6 weeks nonstop. I've trained my butt off. I stopped eating. I stopped drinking water. I stopped everything. And this guy couldn't even not go for a smoke break right before my fight. And this guy couldn't even stop for a second to look me in the eye before I go into the biggest fight of my life and say, I'm here and I'm hearing what you're saying and I pay attention to you, Dominic. I got you. He couldn't do that. He's like this. He's trying not to look at me. He wouldn't shake my hand.
Hey, that relationship, I would assume, is a... Now, granted, in football, whenever we had our replacement refs, it was a catastrophe. And I think even with the regular refs, sometimes it's a catastrophe because, like you said, human error. But when it comes to fighting, that relationship between the two warriors in there in the ref, I mean, that has to be a pretty intimate one, I'd assume, because you hear a lot of conversations. Like the guy kneed the guy in the balls twice, and then he gave him a knee to the head earlier. And the ref was like, what are you doing? Like that conversation was almost like how hockey refs talk to hockey. It has to be a pretty good relationship in there. So whenever you see that, that has to be a bit alarming. And then the fight ends the way it does when you're trying to get up and he stops it. It's almost like you have to have a terrible taste in your mouth after that, I'd assume.
Well, that's what I'd have to say. It's really tough for me as an athlete to accept that as a loss. To me, I lost to the ref, not to Cejudo. And then you're going to hear everybody else say, oh, yeah, but this, but that. And it's like, yeah, but I'm an athlete. And I fight. I've been hit harder than that my whole life. Like, I've been dropped several times in fights. This is part of the upbringing of fights is you get floored sometimes. You're going to get hit. This is part of it. Now, if you shell up and cover up and do this, I get it. Stop the fight. Like, you're saving yourself. But if this guy's moving and trying to get to his feet, you know, give him a shot. Give him a chance to fight this thing out. And I like what you said about the relationship with the fighters, man. I think that the way we're talking about complaining about, you know, this can change and this shouldn't have gone this way and your fight shouldn't have gone that way. But I think a more important question is what can actually be done about it, right? And if you talk about Floyd Mayweather and any of his fights, you can look at any of his contracts and he actually negotiates the referee before any of his fights. Mm. So he talks about it, adds it into the contract, into the negotiation. And then him and the fighter both decide on a referee that fits them that they both trust. Why would he do that? Because there's tons of money on the line and health is on the line and brains are on the line and body parts are on the line. And if that referee isn't aligned with the fighters and doesn't know where they're at and how they're doing things, then I don't think that's very safe. And, you know, the commission says they're here for our safety. Then why wouldn't you let us choose the person that keeps us safe? Why do you choose that for us? If all of your referees and judges are all accountable and trustworthy, then why can't we just pick anyone that we want?
The judges is a whole nother conversation. And when Dana White comes out and he's like, the judges got it wrong. Like, that is a wild thing for me to think of as like other professional sports, because the commission who is hired, I don't know if they're sanctioned, whatever the hell it is, their job is to pick a winner for Dana's league, right? So this company or whoever it is, they're hired to pick a winner. Then the head guy's like, well, they got it wrong. You would think that Dana would be able to, like, well, then let's go ahead and just do this. But I guess that's not how it works whenever it's sanctioned fights, because the judge's ruling is the judge's ruling. Because if you look at that Holloway fight, and I don't know anything from anything, right? I don't know much about much. I don't know how much leg kicks are scored and takedowns and defense. I don't know all that stuff. But the ESPN Plus app had the color of the fighters on there. And Max, that other dude was bright red, his entire body. And Max was not. I was like, so I'm just looking at him like, well, it feels like Max probably won this one. And my eyes, I think Max won this one. And then when he doesn't win it and the other guy wins it, I think there's a lot of conversations like, how does this happen? And I guess it's because you got some stooges in there that make decisions, but it feels to be a common occasion. If it feels to happen on a regular occasion, am I accurate? I mean, it's like almost once a fight night, there's like, oh, some idiot made a bad decision.
Well, this is the best way I can explain it to you in a way that you can understand, that if you don't fight and stuff like you're saying. Because you're right, there's some weird decisions going on. But the problem is everybody's not working as a unit in fighting right now. When we started in fighting, we came over. Mixed martial arts is a brand new sport, 20 years tops, right? I'll try to make this a quick explanation. But in the sport of boxing, it took years for them to get the Muhammad Ali Act to give everybody all these like different fair transactions in the negotiations of a contract. Well, all that boxing commission and everything stayed there because MMA had no commission. So what did we do? We had to grab what was there. We couldn't make up our own sanctioning body. So we just took boxings and we threw it into our sport. Now that we've done that, I mean, we all know boxing hasn't necessarily been the most credible either, right? So we get all of them and we're bringing them into our sport because we have nothing better at that point of the sport. Now, the sport has progressed and gotten to a whole nother level these days. The problem is we're still stuck with that same like-minded commission. And now here's the big problem. They're not willing to work with us. They're saying we are a separate body. We are a separate entity. We are family owned. The only way to get into this is to be family or be hired by family or to have a hookup in the family.
Oh, it's a mafia.
That's what it is. And when you try to talk to them, it's our way or the highway. We run this. You can't touch us. So then here's the other problem. If you go to Vegas and you have that commission, we can't talk to them. That commission won't talk to any other commission. So if you go to Jacksonville and try to have the commission in Vegas talk to the commission in Jacksonville, they'll be hating each other and competing with each other to see whose rules are better. They'll change the rules on each other, and they'll say, I'm a better referee, I'm a better judge, we have a better system here in this state than you do in that state. So now they're competing with each other. So each state you go to as a fighter, you also have to pay attention to different rules, different scoring systems, different everything. And it's very confusing, all because the commission doesn't just want to get their stuff together and work with us as a group. If we're all one, we're all connected. But I believe too, now if you give a promoter ruling over the commission, now the promoter can dictate the fights too. So you also can't have that.
WWE.
It is tough.
Yeah, then you got WWE potentially, or professional wrestling potentially. And it's like, I mean, there is so much that goes into it. And what about Abu Dhabi? They have their own commission. I assume they don't talk to the Jacksonville commission. I would assume they're not talking to the Jacksonville commission.
You're right. You're very right about that.
That is an insane to go, because that's deciding who makes money, who doesn't make money, what careers are worth it, what careers are not. And if they're not all on the same page with the same rules, that seems to be something that they should be fixed, especially whenever there's like $4.55 billion being spent into the sport being purchased. That makes no sense. Hopefully, Dominic, you'll be able to be a part of that. Let's move back to you getting back into the cage here. So you're 35 years old, and you've fought for a long time. And it has been said that you are nowhere near done. You still feel good, want to fight. The fight that would make sense, obviously, if you think about the controversial stoppage with you and Cejudo, then Cejudo vacates the title, and then Jan and Aldo fight for the said title, and now Jan's got it. The fight that makes sense would be you and Jan. I'm not a fight maker, but that feels like the right thing. Hey, he looked like a stud on set. Hey, he looked like he never got tired. He never got tired. He looked explosive. He looks like the guy. And I talked to Cormier last week or 2 weeks ago. I said, when you see these guys that I think are monsters, he said, I just want to make them look average. I think like when I get in there, I'll make them look average. When you see Jan, what do you think if that was to be your next fight? What are your thoughts on him? That was an impressive showing by him, especially against Aldo.
Yeah, well, you got to talk about the champion of the division, don't you? You have to. It's the 130. He's the champion right now, and he did what it took. Because he didn't just beat Aldo, let's not forget. He dismantled everybody he fought. He finished pretty much everybody. He knocked almost everybody out that he fought. And he did it handily. He switches stance. He shifts in between stance. He's very patient. He's got good reads. He's the legit champion. Now, what I look at is how long I've been doing this sport. Like 17 years, and watching, for me, it's watching the progression of the sport, watching guys where they stand. Like if you look at Aldo has a style that's how most styles looked 10 years ago when I was doing this. When you look at Jan, do you notice he'll stay in one stance, switch stance in the middle of it, and he's just as good defensively and offensively. He switches his feet the other way. The best way I can equate that is in basketball. If you've got LeBron James doing a layup on the left side, he can also do it on the right side, but he can also dunk and do everything on both sides of the hoop flawlessly. That's basically what you're doing in fighting. You're switching sides. You're able to defend and do everything perfectly on both sides. That's unheard of. In the past, it used to be just one-sided you stayed on, and that was it. If you switched, you lost some of your defense, you lost some of your offense. This guy pours it on. He doesn't get tired. And like you said, 27 years old, hungry, got, you know, hungry, thirsty, just wants everything. You could see it in his eyes. And so those are the guys that you want champion. Those are the guys that push the division. Those are the guys, you know, as a champion, it's our responsibility to not just push ourselves, it's to push the division. We're all one. I can't be impressive unless I fight a Uriah Faber, who gives me a crazy rivalry for years and years. And now that rivalry is what makes me good. What makes the superheroes the best is the supervillain.
Oh! Wow.
And that's what Jan brings to this division. He brings a whole nother level where he's like, yo, let's go. Bring it. Come on, I'm angry. You guys can't touch me. Sterling brings that. Sandhagen brings that. I mean, there's so many guys that are just hungry right now for that top spot. Bantamweight division is on fire. I'm honored to be a part of it, and I'm honored to face all these guys. They're savages.
You're a savage as well. The dominator. Absolute savage. 17 years in the game. I mean, the fact that your brain operates at the fashion it does still is amazing, and obviously a massive compliment to your fighting abilities and Baba and moving. You're a mover in there, Dominic, which I am very impressed by. Let's talk about a different division. Jorge Masvidal, Street Jesus, takes a fight 6 days' notice, has to lose 20 pounds, which or 19 pounds, I guess, was the actual number at the end of the day. Whenever you see, and after the first round, he had his hands on his head. I would assume Usman saw him do this after the first round and was like, okay, we're in a pretty good spot here. The guy took a fight on 6 days, and after the first round, he's already seems to be a bit winded. How difficult is that, though, for somebody who doesn't know the fight game? 6 days out. In my eyes, that feels like a damn near impossible task, but I still bet on him. I still bet on him rather have. But that feels like, while watching it, it was like, man, this looks like a guy who hasn't had enough time cardio-wise as somebody else. Is that how you saw it as well?
Yeah, well, what happened, man, is that he probably did put in the work. But when you know, when you're not sure if you're going to get the fight or not, you kind of take, instead of just flooring it, you kind of just, you let off just a little bit. And I'm sure Jorge Masvidal did that. He was preparing. He knew there was a possibility that they would call him. Somebody would get pulled out. Somebody would get hurt. As a fighter, even me, everybody in the division is ready to jump on the fight if somebody gets hurt. So we're all training. So he was training. But I think that little layoff that he might have had really probably hurt his cardio in those later rounds.
That's human nature, though. That's literally human nature. It's like, okay, I don't have an actual target that I have to work for that could potentially be killing me, but I'm still going to work hard. I mean, that's just a tough... The fact he took the fight is awesome. Mm-hmm. The fact he ate pizza on the way over there, awesome. And Usman probably was very excited going in there. He looked very confident going in.
Dom, going off of that, is there any point, like, psychologically when you get into the octagon where you kind of just think, like, I don't really have it tonight? And then or is it always just, like, you're looking for that next, like, slip up where you can knock a guy out or submit him? Like, is there any point where you're just like, I just don't really have it tonight?
Are you meaning in the back, walking into there?
Yeah, like once you get into the octagon and maybe like the first round didn't really go the way you expected it to or something like that. Yeah,
it's going to be a long night, I feel like. Potentially a long night. Okay. Has there ever been that?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you know what? I like that question because, yes, that happens more often than you think. The cool thing, though, is that in mixed martial arts, there's so many options. Like, if you're boxing somebody and he starts socking you in the face and your head's doing this, and you're like, you get out of that round, you come back to your corner, you're like, I don't know what the hell he's doing. Like, you're screwed. You have no options. It's over for you. You know what I mean? But if you're getting socked up like this, you come back to the corner and you're like, man, I don't know what he's hitting me with. Take him down now. Put him on the floor. You are going to get creamed if you don't do it. And so there's always options. Knee him in the face. Throw an elbow. When he throws his right hand, he keeps clipping you with his right hand. Look at your face. It's a bloody mess. Next time he throws that punch, meet him in the middle. Let him hit you. You hit him harder with the elbow. He'll go out. There's things you can do to make those differences, and that's what fighting is.
Is there a lot of lying in the corner as well? Because I heard more than one corner person tell their fighter that they were winning, and they were clearly not winning. Is that something that's all just a mental – that's a coach trying to get the person out of their own head, or what is that, you think?
You kind of cut out a little bit on that. I'm sorry. Can you say that again?
Oh, my God. Unbelievable, Dom. Unbelievable. No.
And you forgot. I know it's asking a lot. You forgot your sleeves. So to ask you to remember that last sentence.
Hey, I've been working out, though.
You're swole, bro. No more creatine for you.
I'm on this keto. It's been working out pretty heavily. A lot of the corner people were lying to their fighters this weekend. They were telling them, you're in the lead. You're winning the first two rounds. Is that because that doubt could potentially seek into the fighter and the corner person's like, oh, we don't need this person to know you are getting slaughtered. Everybody's thinking, no, you're going to win it. You got a couple good ones. That's probably a big part of the entire fight game is keeping the confidence high.
Sometimes you're right. Yeah, sometimes you want that. So it honestly does depend on the fighter, though. It really does. Like, similar to the referee needing to know the athletes that are in there, right? The coach needs to know the athlete too, obviously. And when I know certain guys that I talk to, sometimes you just gotta slap the shit out of them. Sorry. And they're just like, oh, you're right, I'm here, I'm fighting, you're right. And certain people you have to talk calm, like, hey, we're here, you got this, you understand that, you just take some deep breaths, you're fine, this is what you gotta do. And you gotta, every single person is different, every approach is not the same. Just like your interviews, you can't talk to everybody the same, or do you?
Nah, I can't. There's some. We talked to a guy earlier today, Bruce Feldman, wealth of knowledge, but boy, each answer is about 7 minutes long. That was a tough one. I don't want to step on him because he's a guest, but then there were some times where I was like, okay, there's like 10 things you've covered right there I'd like to talk about. Diggs, what do you got? Yep.
Tom, is there any way that you could tell Dana that the East Coast has a hard time staying up till 3 o'clock to watch the main event?
Bro, that was terrible. Don, that was terrible this weekend. That was impossible to stay up for that fight.
Well, I guess the better question is, what would be the time for East Coasters and West Coasters that we could have had it where everybody's happy?
Well,
what
I think three p.m. with a noon maybe on West would have been good.
3, 4, so then that would have been 6 p.m. West Coast time, and that would have worked. So I wonder why we didn't do that. What time would it have been in Abu Dhabi?
I think it would have been like their night. It would have been like 10 p.m. or something like that.
So I have no clue why they didn't do that. Maybe it had to do with the commission.
What is that? What is fight day like? Because you see that they were fighting at 6 a.m. I assume they were trying their best to stay on the East Coast time zone as they were in Abu Dhabi. But a lot of fighters obviously don't even arrive to the arena until fights have already started. Do you have like a set nap time? Do they give you like Ambien or like what is the day set up to the fight so you're at optimal time at 11:30 p.m. or midnight or whatever?
When I fought it, in COVID, in this COVID scenario, it was much different. They can only have... Excuse me. They can only have two
don't
people.
Don't die over there. I mean, geez, get back to your corner. Don't die over there.
I burped.
Okay, excuse good. Me. Yeah, all right.
They can only have two people in the arena fighting at once, or no, two groups, so like two teams. So when I went in, there was one team, or the two teams ahead of me that were fighting, right? And then my team and the other one. So I guess technically four teams were allowed in one arena at one time. Then you have all the workers. The whole inside of it is just silent, and you just got some workers with big old like glass screens in front of the tables that are watching the fights, officials and everything. And you know, they brought us in, man. I had, by the time I got in, into the to the locker room, I had 40 an hour maybe tops to warm up, and then I was in there. So it was very quick, very efficient. Right when you leave, right when you finish your fight, they have you get dressed and get right out, and the new crew comes in, and it's like, it's like clockwork.
What do you do during the day, though? Like, whenever Usman showed up and Masvidal showed up, or when you're the last fight, let's say on an entire card, do you get, like, how is the day schedule? I've always been intrigued by this, because you're being asked to be at your peak performance at, like, midnight, some guys. Or, you got to be at midnight. Are you training at that time? Are you, like, or is there a nap set? Like, what is the routine to get in, so you're at optimal time? Yeah.
Yeah, the whole week you set yourself up just for that fight time. Like the whole, everything about your week in the camp before, like before my fights, if I know I'm going to Abu Dhabi, I will find out the fight time, and I'll be sparring and training at that time in practice here.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
That's what most people do, or you'll get there 2 weeks early and you'll acclimate and do that in the place that you're fighting too. That happens as well.
Where do you live at full time?
San Diego, but I'm from Tucson, Arizona. My family's out there. That's where I was raised, so I go back and forth in Vegas.
Were you a big time wrestler, I'd assume? You got that big ass cauliflower here on that left ear.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I started with wrestling and crossed over to fighting right after wrestling.
You're one of those guys when you know, you walk into a bar, you just gotta kinda survey the place. Like, all right, where's cauliflower ear? Right there. Stay away from that little motherfucker right there.
No, that's the thing, man. I'm good at blending. I blend right in. You won't even I'll smile at you. We'll be chilling. There won't be any issues until there's issues. You know what I mean?
I will let you know. You might be good at blending, but I got LASIK. I got 20/10. I see that cauliflower ear from probably before I even walk into the bar.
No, people do spot it nowadays, though. People are like, they now more than ever. It didn't used to be that way.
See that handsome guy at the bar right over there? If anything pops off, fucking steer clear of that guy right over there. Don, we
actually we're sometimes the most calm. Don't forget that.
Yeah, it's because, you know, there's not a single drunk human in there that could do a single thing to you. Matt Mitrione.
A lot of peace we carry.
Matt Mitrione is from here, you know, and I've gone out with him a couple times. And he's like, what, 6'5", 285 pounds or whatever, and he's a trained fighter. And we walk into a place, and I just look at the bouncer, and I wonder, like, there's really nothing you can fucking do. Just like, if this guy who is 285 pounds wants to do anything, there is not a single thing you could do. But you do see numerous bouncers kind of move towards the area. And Matt, very chill. Most fighters, very, very chill humans, which kind of is an interesting thing about flipping a switch, going in and trying to kill somebody and then coming back out. But the thought of just being able to be a ninja in real life has to be a pretty cool one. I mean, that has to be a pretty cool feeling. That has to be.
You know what's funny about that is how you read the situation that they're moving around trying to get set just in case, right?
Oh yeah.
So as a fighter, you know that the referees are you know that the bouncers are doing this. You're always watching yourself. You're always watching, because just like they're looking at you as a threat, you're looking at who your threats are too, and your exits and everything that you got going on, right? So when I'm looking at I train bouncers to I'm a little guy. But I train them on how to hold people and get them out without having to F them up, without having to make them bleed, without having, like, grab them in certain locks where they're just big, giant dudes like you, where you can just grab them in a certain way and lift them up and carry them out. My little, exactly. Like, with biceps like that, you let me know I got you, bro.
Hey, if you could teach me some of those little things, that'd be great news. You know what I mean? We're fingering guys and getting them knocked out.
We teach them how to move each other out. So when I see them looking at me, I just make friends with them, because all they want to do is make sure you're not a threat. And once you shake their hand, they know who you are, that you shake their hand, you say hi to them. You guys actually have an understanding with one another. You don't want any beef with one another. You guys just, hey, if there's any issues, we're good. Trust me. You don't need to come to me. I got your back. And then you just slip right out when there's any beef.
Hey, and the bouncers want you on their side bad anyways. Like, all
that's right.
Hey, who's going to go make peace with the fucking ninja over there? Who's going to do it? Ladies and gentlemen. Former bantamweight, WEC, and UFC champion, the Dominator, Dominic Cruz.
Yeah! Oh, it's been a pleasure, guys. Thank you so much. You're awesome.
Hey, we hope you come back. You're really good at this.
I'd love to come back. You guys are great, too.
All right. Well, cheers, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, boys.
Yep. Today's show is brought to you by Lisa. Lisa Mattress is the mattress that I'm laying on currently next to my lady, and our pit bull and Sharpay. Chuck the Corgi now sleeps outside the room. Locked out. Still inside the house, outside of the bedroom. But he can kind of run and shit and piss wherever the hell he wants, just outside of the bedroom, because he gets a little bit bossy with the bed and where he puts his ass out on the pillows and stuff like that. But I can't blame him, because when you get a chance to sleep on a Lisa mattress, you take advantage of it. This is the most comfortable bed I've ever been on. And this bed showed up at my front door in a box. That box was unpacked in less than 5 minutes, and whammy, the best mattress I've ever slept on is now in my bedroom, thanks to Lisa. That's what they do. Lisa took this car salesman aspect out of the mattress shopping business. No longer do you gotta go lay on. No, you can't now, obviously, because quarantine, which is good news. New bed can come. Probably wearing out your bed right now, whether it's making love or just laying on your ass, doing whatever you gotta do to get through this whole thing. New bed can come in a couple of days, bang, in a box to your front door, unpack it, put it in the bedroom. You got the most comfortable mattress you've ever had. And for right now, you get up to $200 off and free shipping at Leesa.com. That's Leesa.com. It'll be worth it. It's changed our entire sleep. I mean, it's really good stuff. Lady, do you agree?
Love it.
She loves the mattress. See, lady, she's obviously a lot lighter than I am, smaller than I am. You would think, oh no, the bed won't be able. They did all the studies. They did all the science. It's great for all body types. Just like this show. Oh, smooth transition. Winning awards for that type of stuff. Spring training is currently happening 2.0. Baseball is back. Nobody thought it was going to happen. And one of the most electrifying figures in the history of the sport, World Series champ two times, ladies and gentlemen, Ozzie Guillen. Ozzy, I'll tell you what, the boys were super pumped to see that your name was coming on our show, as am I. We are so thankful, brother.
No, thank you so much. I get up this morning watching couple of your shows. It's funny. I like funny shows. I like when people go into it, tell the truth. When you have a show, you got to tell the truth. Sometimes politically correct is you know, get you anywhere.
Okay, so I was going to ask you about this at some point, but some of your best clips. Now, granted, you're an incredible manager, right? And so that gets kind of lost in the shuffle a little bit. If you have a good personality, sometimes that can get lost in the shuffle. You're an incredible manager, but some of your best clips is whenever you were handling the media and talking to the media. What was your biggest beef with the media? Did you think they were unfair? You think they were stupid? What was the real thing? Because I have my thoughts. I thought they didn't know much about my position, so anybody talked about it, I wanted to slap them in the mouth. It seems like you had a lot more encounters with them, though, and those were always electrifying videos on the internet.
Well, remember, I grew up in Chicago. I grew up playing Chicago. I know most of the people or the media in Chicago. And I always try to be honest. And be honest, they know what kind of honesty I have with them. And I think right now the media in Chicago, they're very weak. Very, very weak. I work in this side now as a media. Sometimes when they're going to interview the managers, the coaches, either sport, they're really worry about what they're going to ask the guy and they'll get upset. With me, there was maybe because they know they're going to give from me what they want to hear, know what they want to find out. And I think that, you know me, I have, with the media, I don't have any problem at all in Chicago at all. I got in trouble a couple of times off record stuff. And when they put it back, they said, you really say that? I said, no, but it was on record, but I don't say it that way. But yes, I say it that way, and I keep up with my work. And sometimes it got me in trouble, but when they find out the real thing, they know I was right. They know I know what's tried to molest her or unrespect anybody. But it take me a couple of weeks to make sure that thing every day, talking about the same stuff and to get it ready, to get it right. And find, you know, I mean, thank God I did it.
Well, Ozzy, it's because of those situations, though, that I think that everybody is drawn to you. And I think you're a guy that in the baseball history books will go down as a very memorable part of the sport of baseball. Let's talk about baseball. Rob Manfred in the MLBPA there, it was ugly for a while. It felt like Rob Manfred, every single time he had a chance, he was sticking his foot in his mouth further. But ultimately, they get a deal done to bring back spring training 2.0. And then ultimately a 60-game season. I'll talk to you about that in a bit, but was there a time where you thought baseball was not going to come back because of how ugly it was getting publicly?
I lost a lot of bets. I bet with my kids a couple of dinner. I bet with guy a couple rounds of golf because the thing I see it, and I still look at it that way. You know what I mean? I don't want to say I'm old school baseball guy. I was in the 80s and the 90s and even the 70s when I was a fan. I cannot see baseball the way they're going to play it this year. I want to work on it. I want to see the difference is baseball is between 2020 and the rest of the baseball life. It's going to be weird. You got no fans. Players can't even be talking to each other. They don't know what they're going to say. Everything is confusing. Players cannot be together at the dugout, but they can be together in the clubhouse. I don't know. The disease is going to be transmitted from 2 feet to another. Media not be covered. The media not going to be covered. I think they just did it. Because remember, next year is going to be a big step for baseball. They're going to they're going to talk about the future of the game. I think Manfred, he got a tough time. He got a very tough time because it's a very tough situation for him because sometimes not the Mets. Is they play or not? Is the governor going to demand it? And besides that, I think Clark, he have a problem because when players was tweeting and players saying stuff that back and forth. And I said in the show one day, I said, listen, y'all was Clark. I made sure to all my players shut up. We handle this. This is not an easy situation because players go back and forth like, well, we do, we don't, we don't care, we do, we care. And that make the transaction a little bit tougher and difficult. And I'm glad they're playing. I'm not with them. I'm not supporting them because I think they're going to play in weird situations. I love it because I'm going to make money out of that game. I'll be working on TV, but it's going to be very interesting. Very, very interesting how this season is going to handle it because it's going to be 100% different than what we see in the past.
Okay, so let's talk about the season, how it's going to be different. Let's get rid of the fans and the separation of the clubhouse and the dugout, which in MLS, they're doing the same thing. In the NFL, players will be hitting each other for an entire game, and then afterwards, they can't dap each other up. They have to socially distance. So there's a lot of things that make zero sense. But let's just talk about the sport itself. 60-game season. If you were a manager for a team right now, what would you be telling your team? Because baseball forever has been a marathon sport. It's always been, hey, 162 games, we're going to grind it out. We'll find some grooves. We won't. Maybe we'll get let. Like, how do you change the mentality of baseball players, especially at the professional level who play for so long, and say, hey, this is a 60-game sprint? What would your message be, and who do you think this is going to favor?
Well, you know, I mean, I want to talk about a winning team. Winning team is like, hey, it's going to be trophy involved? Yes, I want it. I want the trophy. I don't care. 30 games or 190 games. I want that trophy no matter the situation is going to be. My players, it's different organization, different teams. You know what I mean? You're the Dodgers, you better win. You're the Yankees, you better win. You're the White Sox, you better win. You know, it's so many people involved right now. In the short season, anything can happen. Anything. Because, you know what I mean, it's good for a fact. The only reason I know one this short season for excuse. Oh, it was a short season. It was a weird thing. We couldn't make it. We're not playing that well. This play not playing good. This manager was terrible. You know, all the little excuses because of short season, it can happen. But the thing I love about this season is just because anybody, any team can get hot and go to the playoff and get there to the World Series.
The Pittsburgh Pirates can win this year?
Well, yes.
No! You know
what I mean? Wow. Wait a minute. You know why? The Marlins, because you don't never know. This is not a basketball team. This is not a football. Baseball is different. Baseball is so weird. So weird, you never know it. Look at this year, the Nationals. Nationals was like, they only win like 10 games in the first 42 games. All of a sudden, they win the championship. You know why? Because it's a long season, and you can have a chance to recover. But in baseball, you can start hot or you can start cold. You start cold. It reminds me a little bit of Winter League baseball. Mm. I managed Winter League baseball last few years. And one day you're in the first place, and next week you're last place. You lose 5, 6, 7 games in a row, you're in a hot seat. Okay. And if you win 10 games in a row, you're in good place to be because for the rest of the season. That's why you have to go out and compete every game with the last game of the season.
Okay, so let's talk about how you would have to manage the bullpen here. If you have a pitcher who, and I guess it's very normal for some pitchers to potentially start out a little bit slower, and then for some, whatever reason, they kind of get into it. With this shorter game or shorter season here, if you have a pitcher that's struggling early, are you pulling him to maybe try to get better off the field? Are you hoping that he just hits his groove faster? Like, is there going to be a lot of, like, judgment on managing and what they do with the bullpen? I think there's going to be a lot more importance in that, the strategy of all that. Am I accurate?
Yes, you are. You know what's funny? Last couple of years, last few years, bullpen is a big part of the winning season. Big, huge part. Now, pitchers, they can only go 5 innings, 5 and 1/3. You're not going to see complete games anymore. You're not going to see a guy go last 8, 7, 8 innings. Maybe the veterans, maybe 3 or 4. That's why the bullpen is a key to any winning team in this in last 10 years. You know what? If I'm rebuilding, or we're not going to have it, we don't have enough ball club to win it this year, I go very easy. But if I know I have the opportunity to win, I'm going to give my pitchers the best quality innings to win and rest the bullpen. Because you know how good starters, your bullpen is going to be a fiasco. And to me, my mentality is all about winning. I don't care about rebuilding. I don't care about this guy got 2 years in big league. The guy got 10 years in big league. I think the guy is going to start the season. I don't think he's going to go more than 5 innings, 85 pitches, 90 pitches. But meanwhile, if I have to push the gas and anybody, I will do it. If we win the championship next year and later, they don't even care how many innings you have. you know, you gotta be in DL for the rest of your life. You gotta bring in your hands. That's only people. That's only model for baseball. And I see a lot of guys win the World Series, and they couldn't pitch for the next 2-3 years. They never come back to pitch. They got hurt. They have so many innings in the arm. To me, people, it's just remember the ring. They don't remember who take you to the ring.
Yeah.
And that's why I go to look at it. I got to win the game. Is I have to have a chance to win, and I know I have a chance to win. My play had to be ready to win. Had to be ready to have to go there every day, and you know, I mean, just play hard every day and do what they're supposed to do day in and day out.
It feels like this year would potentially be a year, because they're trying to get people out of the vicinity of the players, that the strike box that would basically tell if a ball is a strike or a ball, instead of the umpire having to judge the strike zone, which I know is something traditional baseball, like working the strike zone. Do you ever see that becoming something in baseball? Because some of your interactions with umpires are some of the best things I've ever watched in my entire life.
You know what? This is the most ridiculous thing I can even see in baseball. They change baseball so much. They really do. They change baseball so much. It's kind of weird. It takes the sensitivity of the game. This year, they come up with the rules. You cannot argue with the umpire. You cannot go there to the field because of the corona. I got a mask to talk to the media. I put my mask and go straight to the umpire and let them know, because the umpire already have enough power. If you make a mistake, it's umpire, because they will, because they're human beings. They make a mistake, and all of a sudden, that's to lose the game. That's a game giving me opportunity to go to the playoff, and I'm going to sit down like, okay, I just take it. I'm being abused. But you got to fight for your team. You don't fight to get fined or you think you're tougher than the umpire. You fight for your team, the best for the ball club. Now, when they have a computer, I think the best thing the umpires did when they have the thing, they go to TV and see the play was right or wrong, they take it away. Like, this is the best thing they come up with. This is fair for everyone. Now they take it away. And I don't see, you know, I mean, the one of the best things work for the baseball, they get taken away. Now the worst thing happened in baseball, they put it back. Umpires, they're human being. They, some umpires, not everyone, they think they're bigger than the game. Some umpires think they come and pay to watch him umpire. And it's not an easy job, man. Believe me, umpire is not an easy job, because the most guy to be hate in the game is the umpire. Mm-hmm. Both teams gonna be against him, the fans gonna be against him, media gonna be against him. It's not any win-win situation for any umpire. But I think they give them too much power. Is that me? I will manage it the same way. I will scream for the dugout. You know, at least. By the way, it's not gonna be fans in the ballpark. You can hear anything happen to you telling the umpire. How much they're going to tolerate what you're saying from the dugout, that's a different scenario.
How much do you have, like, a plan whenever you're going in there to yell at them, or is it just whatever you're feeling in the moment? Did you have, like, a strategy with different umps? Like, hey, I got to make sure this I say this to this guy. I got to talk this way to this guy. Because ultimately, I don't know if you're trying to get ejected or just get a point across. Is there a strategy whenever you're going out there, or is that all pure emotion? Let me kick some dirt on the shoes a little bit.
Well, you know what? It's all about reputation. When I was managing, I was, you know, Ron Garden, I got thrown, Mama, then me, Lou Pinella, my associate, all those guys competed against me, Jim Leland. But the thing was, when I was on the field, I was there forever. My problem was what I talked to them on the field. The problem was after the game, when they asked me, I went at it. And the league don't like it. And that's why they find me. Then you see me everywhere talking with, you know, arguing with the umpire. But when you go to army with the umpire, and the umpire come to you and say, hey, I think I missed the play. That's the way I see it. But when the umpire go like, ho, don't come here. No. And sometimes we go, you're a rookie manager. Umpire think you just got to the game. I said, hey, I played 17 years in the big league. I've been here before you was. Then it's argument between, I know, you know, sometimes you got to come out. If the team not playing well, you come out and just, I don't know, probably get kicked out of the game. Hopefully your team get pumped up and fight for.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to protect your player. Example, if Jim Tomey got strike out, and Jim Tomey come to by me and he's upset about it, okay? Uh-oh, I know this umpire is not good. But it's AJ Pierczynski come to me and argue about other umpires. I don't believe AJ because AJ, he just every pitch is ball for him. and that's why you just see Paul Konerko argument with the umpire. Just like, uh-oh, this is real. Jermaine died. But we like Ozzie Guillen when my magic, when they see me argument on the base, the manager go off, Ozzie just pissed. Ozzie just mad. Ozzie just hung over. But when I see you depend who make you go out and how you're going to protect your player. And that's you know what I mean? That's the way I go about my business, order to protect my players and my team.
Ozzie, do you think that there's a chance that there'll be like a an uptick in like steroid usage this year, potentially with a less amount of games, guys trying to potentially maximize their stats, like going into a you know a new contract?
I just got froze, guys. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, do you think that there's a chance that there's going to be an uptick in like steroid usage this year, potentially with less amount of games, with guys trying to maximize their stats with a limited amount of at bats?
Well, it's really out of the question. I think the best baseball we ever have offensively, when people was using it, right now Major League Baseball is so into it. They go every you never know. Before they let you know who the player is going to be checked out, now they go in. People don't even know about it. Major League Baseball is after that pretty well. It take a little while. It take a long time to get it the right way we should be. But I don't think players right now, you know what I mean, they just, if they did get caught, the one thing in baseball I always say, if the players get caught with steroids again, bang it for the rest of your life. No more baseball for you. Anything we put in the list, you cannot take. Are you positive from that league? Do we take all the money away from you? And we move on. Okay, each example. I sign a contract. If I go to take a steroid to sign a contract for $200 million, I'm taking it every day. You know why? Because if I get suspended, I'm going to get suspended for 80 games, and that's going to cost me like, what, $500,000? And I'm going to continue to make $200 million? Woo, I would have taken every day. That's why if you get caught, they say, listen, you're going to play for, you suspend for the rest of the year, and you're going to play for the minimum, and you got to start over with all your stuff. Then players will think about it. But believe me, if I'm going to make $200 million, and I'm going to get caught, I'm going to get suspended for 80 days, oh, I will tell my people, hey, man, you know, that is what it is.
It is what it is. Ozzie, I can't thank you enough for joining us. You're an absolute legend, man. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for the opportunity, guys. Hopefully see you guys again. Hopefully I'll be your show again.
Hell yes, Ozzie. We can't wait to talk to you again, ladies and gentlemen.
Anytime, buddy, anytime. Thank you so much.
Hey, we're going to hold you to that.
Hey, I'm available.
Ozzie Guillen! Yeah!
Ozzie!
We appreciate you, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Oh, legend, dude.
Such a beast.
A great steroid question there you just snuck in there.
Figured, you know.
By the way, that would be how you punish people.
I also knew that he is not a fan of guys who took steroids.
Yeah, so you thought he was going to potentially get a little fired up there.
They
ruined the game. Man, that was... Because how fiery he is. Mm-hmm. Then once you start hearing like the reasons why he's doing it, it's like everything makes sense. And you said before he got on, I wasn't a big baseball guy for a long time whenever he was reigning. Good manager.
Oh, yeah. Smart, good player.
And a
too.
Good player, yeah.
Yeah, and he just said like, hey, listen, they won't care who threw to get the World Series. If we're getting the trophy, guys might end up on DL. Like, hey, listen, he's having a conversation like, hey, we have a team to win this year. We are going to go and get it, and it's going to ride in our bullpen. I love that mindset.
I tell you, too, like being a Cubs fan, I absolutely hated him, but I respect him. He's amazing.
Yeah, you were very pumped whenever his name was popped
up. I love Ozzie Guillen.
He said I'm from Chicago, too. He said he knows.
Yeah, he lived in Cicero, like right down the street when I grew up.
Oh, really? Mm. Did you guys ever meet?
No, I actually met him once at a Park District event.
And how was it? How'd it go? Did he kiss
exactly
him?
How that was, but R-rated. He is very off-the-hip kind of guy.
Well, we got to get him strictly on the YouTube show and see what happens. Fellas, are you prepared to unveil your summer bod? The beaches are opening, the sun is shining, and the bushes must be tamed. Manscaped is here to ensure your post-quarantine body is ready for the wild. Manscaped is dedicated to helping you level up your full body grooming game. They have forever changed the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0. The Perfect Package 3.0 kit comes with the essential Lawnmower 3.0 waterproof, cordless body trimmer, and a ton of other liquid formulations to round out your manscaping routine. Subscribe to the Perfect Package and get a new blade refill for your lawnmower trimmer delivered to your door every 3 months. For a limited time, subscribers get two free gifts: the Shed Travel Bag, which is a $39 value, and the patented high-performance reduced chafing Manscaped Boxer Briefs. Wow. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PATM at manscaped.com. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PATM at manscaped.com. 20% off, free shipping, manscaped.com, and use code PATM. Your balls will thank you. I see that your dry erase board is still for Bill Smith.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel bad for Big Bill, you know? He's done so much for us.
First of all, it's not Bill because his name's not William. It's Willard.
Oh. So it's Billard Smith.
So Billard.
Yeah, if yeah. anything.
Billard Smith.
Okay.
Anyways, Billard Smith had a long weekend. A lot of memes. That red table, by the way, very aggressive decision to do it. Mm-hmm. But Bill knows content game.
Yeah, he does.
Those numbers are massive. And, by the way, we've seen that face in plenty of movies before. Turns out, really good actor. Like, when he's actually befuddled and sad, exact same face as when he's acting befuddled and sad. Yeah. Good for Will Smith.
Well, he's not acting in any of his movies. That's him. He just plays Will Smith in every movie.
Oh, and that's why they're all so good.
Yeah. Billard's the best.
I mean, yeah, Billard's
the
best.
I didn't want to get into this because, you know, I don't like the guy for professional reasons. I didn't want to get into his personal life, but it's been spattered all over the internet. People are expecting me to say something. Look, all I'll say is, his son said basically that Tyler, the Creator, was his father. His daughter's writing letters to Tupac, and his wife's out there sleeping with everybody on the town. Jeez. So Will needs to get his house in order, and then maybe he'll get his career back on track. But everything's falling apart for the guy. And I don't want to revel in it. You know, I don't want to be the guy to sit here and say, I told you so, and that he was going to bomb and everything was going to collapse on him. But here we are. Jeez. You guys made me do this. I hope you're happy.
Back on track.
I'm not happy with what you just said about Billard. Unbelievable. Oh,
Bad Boys for Life was so good.
So good.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah. Did anyone see it?
Yeah, it was a banger. I did.
I did not see it. I know. That's a tough weekend. I mean, everything you just ran, I didn't know all of that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that to the extent. Those are the things about my Billard Smith, my Fresh Prince, that I try not to learn about because I like to keep him in high regard because him.
These are things I don't want to know either, Pep, but people send them to me because they assume since I don't like the guy's movies that I have to stay up to date on everything he does.
It's a sad situation with August Alsina and Jada Pinkett Smith because August was in love and Jada just called an entanglement. That's tough. That's a heartbreaker.
Oh, they just got tangled up?
An entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
That was the word of a choice, an entanglement. And then the way Will, I mean, granted, this is a big sports show, Will laid it out was basically like August came to them for help because at the time he was not healthy or something like that. And then they broke up and then an entanglement. You know what I mean?
She nursed them back to life?
I believe there's a lot of nursing.
That's what it seems like.
But everybody's going after Will. Poor Will here.
I know.
Poor Will.
I'd like to see a little less Will Smith, a little more Mike Lowry. Maybe you should go beat the hell out of this guy or something.
You know, maybe Savage Will comes from this entire thing. How long can you get beaten up for by stooges like Nick before you finally say, enough's enough, no more Mr. Nice Guy. I ain't Fresh Prince anymore. I'm Savage Prince.
Or, like Ty brought up last week, was he enjoying it? Did Will just sit back and watch and take it all in and say, okay, this isn't so
all bad. Right, we're not intern mitts here. I mean, Nick, that was unbelievable what you just did right there. There was no reason for you just to rattle off all of Will Smith's life's transgression. Not once did I hear Men in Black talked about being not one Wild Wild West.
Oh, come on.
Getting jiggy with it. Oh.
I heard he's also been doing some shopping on Wayfair, so.
Okay. All right. What's this guy doing? What is this guy doing? Nick. Goodness gracious.
Let's move on. Those are some very expensive cabinets.
Yeah. Sweet Jesus, boys.
Your face.
Great craftsmanship, though.
Your face.
Well, it's so funny, Diggs. Hey.
Tony.
Diggs, what's so funny?
Your face when he said
it. Oh, my God. There's nothing like... I mean, there's so much to talk about here. There's so much to... But I'm just not... Nobody wants to come to us to hear about this.
No. Okay,
up for bail though.
But I would like everybody to know that, boy, I got into some rabbit holes this weekend, and they were deep down there.
Expensive cabinets.
Billers. Just for my sake, just to get my. I don't think they were coming inside of the cabinets. By the way, I think it was an alongside purchase for those that are on the internet. If anything, I think it's an alongside. I don't think they show up in the cabinet.
Oh. I thought that was the method of transportation.
That's what everybody was saying, and I was like, "There's no way that's there's." But all of it seems insane to me. Oh, and then there's allegedly a couple vids from old. Is she still alive? Is she still alive?
Yeah, they might let her out on bail too. So not for long.
Oh my!
Clock's ticking. Clock's ticking.
Show's over.
Thanks, Billard.
Did that make you feel good?
No. What are you looking at me for? I'm sick to my stomach thinking about it.
The NFLPA sent back an economic counter proposal to the NFL. I mean, what do we do? I'd like to go to a break. We'll be back on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now for a very different conversation than the one that was just had. NHL NBC insider, ladies and gentlemen, our guy, friend of the show.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Friend of the show at this point. Is this his third time on the show?
Yeah.
Wee wee. Pierre McGuire.
Patrick, how are you?
Pierre, you have to be feeling fantastic. The NHL is setting the tone on how this whole thing is going to go. They sign an extension on a CBA. They get a lot of more things for the players. They double the playoff roster or the playoff bonus. They're starting training camp on Monday. It's like, what the hell happened to the NHL? This is not how the NHL normally operates, Pierre.
If you go back to the first visit I had with you, Patrick, one of the things we talked about was the problem-solving ability of Gary Bettman and Bill Daly. And they've done a fantastic job in terms of getting the Players Association online, in terms of getting the coaches and the general managers and the owners online. And everybody's worked together, Pat. They really have. It's been a phenomenal process. And I've been in the league 32 years. I'm so proud of the players we have. I'm so proud of the coaches we have. But I'm really proud of the way our league office and the NHLPA have handled this. They've handled it fantastically well.
No offense. You did say that, which was eye-opening, I think, to a lot of us that are just not diehard everyday hockey fans, but we watch and we kind of look from the outside, because the NHL has had work stoppages before. I mean, there has been bargaining, negotiation issues. I think because some of the season was played before the quarantine and business was kind of handled, maybe they were set up a little bit better than possibly the MLB, but the way this has all gone down behind closed doors, two hub cities, everybody thought it was going to be Vegas. No, we're going up to Edmonton and Toronto. We're going to Canada. Like, the way it's all been handled and laid out is next level. What did the owners, because it feels like the players won in this entire thing. The 35-year-old, you have to keep them on the salary cap if they get cut or retire after they're 35 years of age. That's gone. The no trade clause, if they agree to get traded, they can get back onto the no trade clause when they go to the no. That is in play. It feels like everything that's happening has been very pro players, doubling this playoff bonus. Did the NHL owners in this CBA negotiation, did they go in there and like, this is what we need to get all this done? Or did this feel like this was a league really looking out for the players for the long haul here?
I think it's a combination of both, and that's why I use the term spirit of cooperation. I think the players understand that things have worked out really well. When Commissioner Bettman took over the league, Pat, back in 1993-94, the league revenues were about $500 million. Ever since then, the league revenues are now almost $5 billion.
Oh, so he's good. He's good.
The business has grown exponentially, and that's really helped the players. And if you go back to the one lockout you were alluding to in 2004 and 2005, we had the nuclear winter. We didn't have hockey for an entire calendar year. But what it did was it created the salary cap, and I know a lot of people are pro or con, depending on where you stand on the cap. But what the cap didn't do is it didn't bring back salaries. It actually enhanced salaries, because there was a trigger mechanism in the collective bargaining agreement that if revenues went up, the salary cap went up. If the salary cap went up, salaries were going to go up. And so it really hasn't drawn back the salaries. It's actually helped enhance the salaries.
I can't believe that, by the way, that's an astounding stat. He should be on Shark Tank for sure at some point to be able to do that. The thought of
the NHL having home training camp starting on Monday and then traveling to Canada. Are the players just, because of the way this deal has been negotiated and because the NHL has done what it's done to the players, and by the way, being an athlete that sat through a lockout and knows like the behind the scenes of this, what the NHL is giving to the players here in any other sport would take months of negotiation and a lot of things to be given up here. Is that why the players have been so, I don't want to say cool with, but it does seem like the NHL players have been much cooler with a lot of the ideas than a lot of the other sports going in? Are they going into quarantine starting Monday at their home training camps and then they'll travel together to Canada and then they're in quarantine? So this is like a, hey boys, we're going on like a 2-month run here where we're going to be away from everybody.
100%. And you couldn't have said that any better. I mean, that's spot on. So one of the things that I think has really happened, the players realize that in order for the business model to function, they have to be party to it and be real active participants in it. And I think they've done that through these discussions with the ownership group and with the league. And the owners understand that without the players, it's pretty darn tough to run your business. So both groups kind of got their head around this and they said, okay, we got to work together here. And I think they've done a real good job. Donald Fear at the PA deserves a lot of credit with Matthew Schneider and Glenn Healy, and at the league office, Bill Daly and Gary Bettman again. Phenomenal work.
Pierre, what conference are you? Where are you, in a doctor's office? What is
going on? You won't believe this. I'm working at a hockey camp. I'm giving back to the game in Boston. I've been doing this.
Yeah! The Bean!
So I met a real good friend of mine. He owns the rink. His name is Scott Fusco. He and his brother Mark both won the Hobie Baker playing at Harvard, which is a Heisman Trophy for hockey. The only brothers that have ever won the Hobie Baker. So I'm at that rink. Been coming here for 15 years, and it's a pleasure just to give back to the game and work with young players.
Harvard hockey is never going to happen again, but that is awesome that they accomplished that. Do you just show them film of Sidney Crosby the entire time and say, just do that?
You know what? It would be a good idea, but because of quarantining and all that different stuff, Pat, we're not allowed to really be in tight. We get the kids on the ice where we have 12 on each team. Then they go outside. So if we had film study, Pat, I'd be showing them Sidney Crosby. Yeah.
Best player ever. Let's talk about the quarantine, social distancing rules and everything like that. We saw the MLS. They debuted the MLS's back tournament a couple of nights ago. They came onto the field with masks. They played for 100 minutes, breathing, sweating, bumping into each other. And then as soon as that game was over, they had to go into masks and weren't allowed to talk to each other. The NFL just came out yesterday and said, like, hey, here's some of the protocols that we'll be enforcing this year to help social distance. For 60 minutes, or if overtime happens, guys will be spearing each other, guys will be hand-to-hand combat, headbutting each other, and then immediately afterwards, can't even share a jersey with each other, don't even think about dapping each other up, you have to be standing six feet away from each other, all that stuff, right? So there's a lot of interesting rules that are getting put into place to try to make it as safe as possible while also executing the sport. What is the NHL doing? What are the rules there? Are we going to, hey, if Sidney Crosby goes to score 6 goals in the first game, is he allowed to go down the bench and do the fist bump down the entire thing?
I don't think we're going to have that.
Oh! No! No! I was going to break his stick, Pierre. What about after a playoff series, whenever they have the line, the shake hands line, which is like one of the biggest traditions in the history of hockey with the playoff?
You know what? That's a good point. That's something that I was talking about the other day with a friend of mine who plays in the league, and I don't even know whether that's going to happen or not. It is one of the great traditions. Are we just going to bump elbows? Is that how it's going to work? I don't know. But I do know one thing. They're really being progressive in these pods. So that you talked about Edmonton and Toronto being two of the pods that we'll be going to. The thing is that players will be getting tested. Each team will be on a different floor. You won't be able to navigate with another player and another team in the hotel. You can only get on your own team's bus. You can only get in your own team's dressing room. You can't co-mingle with other people that you might be friendly with from other teams. So it's going to be pretty tough conditions. It's going to be pretty Spartan, Pat. It really is.
Are they allowed to check people?
Oh, yeah, that'll be part of it.
Doesn't that just kind of cancel out literally everything you just said there?
I know. I wish I was a medical expert. I could give you more. I'm a follically impaired former coach.
How did it become? Because the question was, it's going to be Vegas, and then people are thinking maybe Columbus, maybe Toronto. Does Gary Bettman just call Canada and go, hey, is there any way you can get rid of that 14-day mandatory quarantine for anybody coming from out of the country so that we can come lock our entire league up there in Canada? How did it become two Canadian cities? Because I think the last time we talked, it was like, well, it might be tough to have a Canadian city even though they want it because of the rules and regulations. Does Gary Bettman just call Canada and do that?
I think there were a lot of people that called, not just Gary Bettman. I think a lot of the Canadian owners, whether it be the people in Winnipeg or the people up in Edmonton, the people in Toronto, the people in Montreal, there's a lot of political capital that I think was spent. But the other thing, and I give credit where credit's due, the Canadians have done a phenomenal job handling this. They really have. And they deserve a lot of credit for it. Edmonton is in a very safe position right now. Toronto's in a real healthy position right now. So I give them a lot of credit. I think Prime Minister Trudeau was lobbied by a lot of different people, and I think he realized it was probably going to be really good for the economy for those two cities in particular.
If Edmonton, you say, is doing very well, if that thing opens back up, will the players be allowed to open back up, or will they have to abide by the NHL rules?
I don't know what you're talking about. The players meaning what?
So, like, if the players are in Edmonton in their pod, but the city of Edmonton's like, hey, this is, by the way, we are now in phase, I don't know if they're doing the same phases as us, phase four, phase five.
Four, I know what you're saying, yeah.
If Edmonton opens back up because of the, like, let's say, how long is this going to last, by the way? How long are they going to be in these pods, you think?
Oh, first of all, Edmonton's going to host the Eastern Conference Final and the Western Conference Final and the Stanley Cup. So if you go all the way to the final, you could be there for 3 months if you were part of the West. So you're going to be there for a while. But no, once you're in the pod, this is the way it was described to me, Pat. Once you're in, you're staying in. And whether they change the rules or not in society, you're staying in your pod.
And welcome to the Hotel California. Such a lovely place.
Pierre, so it came out this week that there's going to be three games pretty much each day at each location. Are you as announcers going into locations? Will you be calling each game at that certain location? Or are you guys going to be calling from an offsite situation?
Great question. As far as I know, I'm going to be going to one of the pods. I'm actually
waiting. Let's go, Pierre! Yeah. Lock it down, Pierre! 3 months! Lock it down! Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Did we lose you?
No.
Oh, we lost you, Pierre? Pierre, no, you're back. Yeah. You're back. Pierre, you're back. So you're
going
to be up there for 4 months, 3 months? You're going to be up in Edmonton for 3 months?
Yeah, I will be. I just don't know which pod I'll be in yet, but I'm waiting for that assignment.
Oh, yes. What are you going to do? You're getting into video games? You a video game guy? What the hell are you going to do?
I'm going to be watching you, and I'm going to be watching football when I'm on my downtime.
Oh,
training camp, you know?
It's not going to be college football, I'll tell you that. Sure, son. Pierre, I don't know if
you... No, it won't be college football. No. I think your brand of football is going to exist.
I think so, too. They're going to power that through. But the next couple weeks, just like the MLB, the NFL and the NFLPA, I think it is going to get... Like, I hope they do it like the... And this, by the way, 2020 is a wild city. I hope that the NFL and the NFLPA handle this like the NHL and the NHLPA handled this entire thing. And I think the fact that the NHL has been at the forefront of like, hey, let's not go ahead and just demolish our reputation with our fans because we're going to make this ugly in public. I think it's going to be the opposite, though. I think the NFL and the NFLPA are going to be a bit public. The NHL and the NHLPA handling this behind closed doors is a miracle. I have no idea how that happened.
Well, again, it goes back to, I think, leadership, really strong and really forceful and smart leadership from both sides. And I think they realize, both parties really realize, you can't exist without the other party. And I think they did want to create a spirit of cooperation. They certainly did that on the NHLPA side and the ownership side.
Did they send an email out early? Like, hey, do not listen. Listen, we're going to get a deal done. Don't tell anybody about anything. We'll figure this out. Nobody needs to know our business. Like, is that a message that is actually sent out to every? Because that's coaches, that's general managers, that's players, that's trainers, that's literally everybody it felt like was very buttoned up and didn't say a damn thing about anything, even if they had real questions or concerns.
Our sport's pretty good at that. You know, most of the guys come from humble beginnings, whether you're a farm boy in Canada or you're a kid that grew up in the United States and had to leave home when you were 14 years old. Most of the kids are coming from pretty humble backgrounds, and I think they follow instruction really well, but they also know their passion and they care about the sport. They care about the well-being of the sport, Pat. They really do.
That's beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. What up, Nick?
Pierre, you mentioned that they're going to try and keep the teams and players separate from each other in the hotels. And I don't know if you saw the list of who's staying in what hotel, but it seems like that was a little bit of a misjudgment in putting Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh all in the same hotel because those teams hate each other and love to mix them up.
Or smart move, because they hate each other so much, these dudes will not mingle with each other. True.
They're going to have to call in the Mounties, I think, to keep them separated.
That's tough. Are they trying to set up a little fight island?
Good Mountie story. Canadians, politicians, or not politicians, but the RCMP is so strict. You talked about the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, that I have friends across the border that have properties in Canada. And once you cross the border, if you're not quarantined for 14 days, you're in big trouble. The RCMP actually calls you to make sure that you're at your property and they can track you once you cross the border. So it's pretty significant.
Are they going to have the horses in at the end of each hall, like at the end of each floor? Like, hey, get back in your bedroom.
Well, you're a football guy. One of the great traditions in Canadian Football League action is a Grey Cup. And at the end of the Grey Cup, it's one of the iconic shots in all of sport is to see the two Mounties carry the Grey Cup into the stadium. It's an awesome shot. If you ever get a chance to see it, check it out, Pat. It's really cool to see.
Well, one of my favorite shots is whenever you and the boys hand over the Stanley Cup to Sidney Crosby. And I think you're going to be doing that in about 3 months up there in Edmonton. I can't thank you enough. Pierre, you're the best, dude.
I'm going to come on with you whenever you ask. It's just a pleasure to be on with you. And I love your passion for our game. We're so grateful to have you as a supporter. Hey, thanks, Pat.
Big hockey guy. Big hockey guy.
Oh, yeah.
Big hockey guy. Will you talk to us from the bubble, or are you not allowed to?
Yes.
Yes! Yeah. We have an insider! Yeah. We have an insider, ladies and gentlemen. Pierre McGuire, you're the best.
Yeah! Yeah.
He's awesome. All right, all right. Hope you enjoyed today. Cheers to all of you. I hope you have a great Tuesday into a Wednesday. And then we'll be back on Thursday. Hashtag this where I'm at, Pat. We got all the photos collected. Zito has been collecting photos throughout the entire quarantine, which, by the way, thank you for letting us, you know, kind of share this time with you. It's been a wild time. The fact that you allowed us into your life while the whole world shut the fuck down, I'm thankful for it. Also, end of the Pod Squad money winner will be announced on Thursday. Takes people like a few days to listen to the entire show. But if you listen to the end of the show where we're at right now, I am thankful for. If you'd like to enter into the next money giveaway, $500, use hashtag end of pod squad. And just give me a little cheers. Randomly selected. Yeah, be a friend, tell a friend. Ty Schmidt, please play some independent music. We'll be back Thursday. Ty, now play some independent music. Thank you.